Thank you, Chair. Good English Urain, distinguished participant. It's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation. I was born in this wonderful city. I studied science, so being in this hall is of particular significance. And I would actually like to start by something that I don't usually do, but I would like to dedicate my presentation, if the panel allows, the whole panel's discussion to one particular person. This person is Professor István Láng, who used to be not only Secretary General of this Academy, but he was also member of the World Commission on Environment and Development, the Brundtland Commission, where I was there at that time as a junior person working, and I learned a lot from him, and the world has learned a lot from him about the issues that I'll be talking about today. So thank you, Professor István Láng. And he's not the only one. There are many people who are important, and I think some of my colleagues in the panel have also clearly indicated how important it is for people to do certain things, to decide certain issues, and I will also address during my presentation a few of those people. I would like to share with you five points that are very much focused on the question of international cooperation, but specifically related to climate change, which of course is the area that I am more familiar with these days. The first point is that the challenges facing the world today are complex, inherently interlinked, and should be informed by the best scientific thinking. Over the next several decades, we have very serious choices to make that could determine the contours of the future for centuries to come. Our planet is approaching and even exceeding scientific tipping points. This has serious implications for how we manage the global commons and for reducing poverty. For example, within this century, how are we to feed, fuel, transport, and house over 10 billion people sharing one planet with finite resources while still staying under 2 degrees Celsius, the threshold of safety? UN member states have just adopted Agenda 2030 for sustainable development. This was addressed by a number of colleagues on this panel, and I understand on other panels before. And this is a huge achievement, and I just like to pay tribute to, it so happens, another Hungarian, but there are a few, because Csaba Körösi, who was at that time ambassador to the United Nations in New York, he was co-chair of the committee that developed the Sustainable Development Goals, and without his effort and his tireless efforts, we would not be where we're today. So thank you for that. He's now advisor to the Hungarian president. But coming back to the challenges of our complex world, by 2030, the global population will grow to 8 billion people, and the world will need at least 50% more food, 45% more energy, and 30% more water. To meet these challenges, we must put science at the center of sustainability. We live in an era of unprecedented human impact on the planet, coupled with unprecedented technological change. Science must point the way to more informed and integrated policymaking, including on climate change, biodiversity, ocean and coastal management, water and food scarcities. But to do science, we also need scientists. And allow me to bring up a related topic for a second. The world is awash with refugees. There have never been as many as now. This country, Hungary, has its challenges in this area, but others, like Turkey and Lebanon, just to take two examples, have had this in much bigger ways for years. But in the midst of all this, we need to remember that history shows that scientists who were refugees, including many from this country and Central Europe, have made significant contributions to scientific collaboration in the 20th century. The best known example is probably the Manhattan Project and the race to build an atomic bomb to defeat fascism after and during World War II. And Hungary had many scientists, and this region had many scientists to contribute to that. So as we think of refugees, let us think of their potential positive contributions to science and indeed to the economy as a whole. I come to my second point. The UN system as a whole needs to be better grounded in science, especially now that the adoption of the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development points to an integrated approach more than ever before. Sustainable development is premised on the integration of three dimensions, social, economic, and environmental. We have 17 goals, we have 169 targets, and they're all interlinked, and you cannot pull out any one of those goals and simply try to address them in isolation, in a silo. The scientific foundation for assessing sustainability should also follow an integrated approach, spanning institutions, sectors, and disciplines, and embracing the physical, social, as well as economic sciences. In 2012, the Secretary General's high-level panel on global sustainability, which I had the opportunity to be executive secretary of, issued a report called Resilient People, Resilient Planet, calling for a major global scientific initiative to strengthen the interface between policy and science. The report of this panel called for the preparation of regular scientific assessments on concepts such as planetary boundaries, environmental tipping points, and other integrated perspectives that would inform decision-making and implementation of sustainable development. While progress has been made in this direction, the bulk of these recommendations still needs to be implemented. This report also recommended that the Secretary General appoint a chief scientific advisor and scientific advisory board that would report to him and provide an integrated interdisciplinary approach. This advisor or advisory board would also consider the social and ethical dimensions of science and technology. With strong support from UNESCO, this board is now operational, but it lacks connection with the United Nations system. One way to solve this would be to complete the recommendation of the global panel and also appoint a UN chief scientist who could serve this function, made that linkage. The third point relates to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It has been mentioned a number of times, which I think it demonstrates global scientific cooperation at its best. Given the gravity of the climate challenge, it is vitally important for the public to have full confidence in the scientific research underpinning international and domestic climate change policy. IPCC is widely considered the gold standard for peer-reviewed climate science. The IPCC reviews and assesses the latest scientific, technical, and socio-economic information produced worldwide. Thousands of scientists at universities and research institutes around the world contribute their time as authors or reviewers. The findings of the first assessment report in 1990 played a decisive role in leading to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change in 1992. Now, looking forward, there are at least two thoughts that I would like to share on how one could perhaps improve IPCC communications, because communications is key. Perhaps one idea is that the IPCC could communicate more quickly and transparently, given we have media that works on a 24 hours, 7 days a week format. We need to be clear what we know, but we also need to be clear to the public of what we don't know. The IPCC may also think of perhaps publishing smaller but more frequent assessment reports. It's good to have these major assessment reports, but 5 to 7 years between those reports is a bit too long. Climate is changing faster, and not just the impacts are happening faster, but the response and some of the technologies that are changing much faster. So we need to be more frequent there. And I come to my fourth point, the Climate Convention, the UNFCCC process, which is an example of one of the few truly global issues that need a global response with all countries concerned. It's, for some issues, really, however difficult, and indeed sometimes these global processes can be cumbersome, but we need all the 195 countries on board. And climate change, resolving climate change is clearly one of them. How could we ever think of resolving climate change without leaving out small countries like Tonga or Kiribati? They may not matter in the global economy, but the impacts on those countries could be disastrous. They could actually disappear. And they might even disappear, even under the two-degree scenario. But how could we leave out the United States, which is one of the largest emitters, but it's also the country that may have some of the biggest potentials for the solutions? So we need all the countries engaged. And now we have 1 month left before the major negotiations complete in Paris or start in Paris. And it is not really the time to start improving or trying to change the system. Let's get on with it now. We have learned from all the good examples of what the UNFCCC process has developed, has delivered in the past, in spite of the constraints. It's now time to build on that, on those successes, and putting all our energies behind getting the results we need in Paris. But we do need the representatives of parties to go beyond the individual country positions. I believe our chair started his introductory remarks in relation to this. We have to think about the global, and the individual countries have to go to Paris and think about the needs of the globe, not just of the need of the country and of the bilateral arrangements that they are making. And I come to my last point, the fifth point. It's just to say that we really need to rethink our 20th century institutions with which we are working today to address the problems of the 21st century. And the two key words that I want to focus on here is complexity and integration. And you know, once we're done in Paris and we have popped open the bottles of champagne, which I hope we will do, we can really start reflecting on some of the recent developments and that actually make us think of different ways of addressing some of these issues. Just for the sake of the dialogue, and I hope that in the question and answer session we can get into some more of this, I just want to share four points that I think radically change the way institutions have to deal with these issues. First, as many times mentioned in this event already, that the Sustainable Development Agenda, the Agenda 2030, that was adopted last month. The second is an increasing understanding that climate change is not a separate thing that you can put into a bubble. Climate change is about development, about sustainable development. It's an integral part of that. The third is a revolutionary change in the engagement of the private sector in relation to sustainability. We have not seen that before. And fourthly, the whole discussion about planetary boundaries and the related concepts and the interrelationship of different parts of this issue. So I would like to submit that the 2030 agenda is really a game changer for how governments, in a remarkable bottom-up process, they have managed to agree to this set of principles and the 17 goals. And this actually creates a kind of a new normal of the goals being set that are totally interlinked, that cannot simply be separated into a goal here, goal there, goal somewhere else. And it then asks the question of how intergovernmental organizations are set up to support member states, to support countries in the implementation of these interrelated goals, because none of them were set up in that way back in the 50s and the 60s and so on. So as a start, I think we need to ensure that the different intergovernmental processes that have produced these ideas converge through the implementation processes. The most obvious is the climate agreements in Paris and the post-2030. There are still so many people in governments, in institutions, who think of these as two separate agendas and we will deal with them separately. No, the implementation is one thing. A windmill in country X under the climate convention is not a different windmill from that one under the sustainable development goals. So we have to make sure that these agendas convert. Added to this, I use the word tectonic changes in the way the private sector is dealing with these issues. I was in a major conference in Paris in May on the private sector's engagement in sustainable development, and in the closing statement I was asked to give, I used this word, tectonic changes. That is what we're talking about. We have never had such a positive approach from the private sector to sustainable development as we have today. Of course, there are the dinosaurs who are not changing, but those are getting relatively smaller, and the new private sector is prepared to engage. So the question remains, is science ready for supporting these new approaches? I'm confident that this session of the World Science Forum will actually deliver some of the response, and just this morning I was looking at the draft declaration, and I think that it is going in that direction. Thank you very much. Köszönöm szépen. Thank you.